This episode is sponsored by Tinuiti. If your customer is streaming it, they can measure it. Their patented machine learning tech is the tool for the job. Rethink performance with Tinuiti, the largest independent performance marketing firm across streaming TV and the triopoly of Google, Meta, and Amazon. Find out how at rethinkperformance.com.
Other streaming services, other broadcasters may not be able to endure for as long as it might take to make this transition. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of all of the above. You know, there was definitely a miss, but I think it needs to be put into perspective and it's not as bad as it looks.
Hey, gang, it's Tuesday, January 31st. Max, Paul, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Tinuiti. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by one of our senior analysts on the digital advertising and media team based out of Pennsylvania. It's Max Willens.
Yo.
Hello, hello. We're also joined by the principal analyst who heads up that very team based out of New York. It's Paul Werner.
Yo, yo.
Hello, hello, gents. Today's fact: hot water freezes faster than cold water. I still don't quite believe this one. It's true, apparently. Why? Why does it? Well, hot water evaporates faster than cold, decreasing its volume and thus the time it takes to freeze. Cold water also could contain more dissolved gases, which lower its freezing point. You don't really need to know all that. It's not really important. All you need to know is if you're trying to make ice cubes, then fill the ice cube trays with hot water and watch as people judge you. There's a tip for you.
Watch as the hot water melts the ice tray and then the whole thing collapses in the freezer.
Yeah. I'm not reimbursing you guys, all right? You did that.
I've heard that thing before about the hot water freezing faster, and I just refuse to believe it. I know it's a fact. I know it's supported by science. I know theoretically it's true, but I'm just going to keep refusing to believe it.
Yeah. Some things are just too counterintuitive. Like when the Knicks win, it's like, it doesn't feel right. Anyway, today's real topic, advertising in sports. Talking about advertising in sports today, folks. We'll talk a little bit about Thursday Night Football being on Amazon Prime Video exclusively this year. Then we'll talk a bit about some ways that advertisers can now advertise within sports. Sponsored logo placements, superimposing digital ads on sports arenas or in sports arenas, things like that. So let's start, though, with the news that Amazon's first year of Thursday Night Football missed viewership goals. So Thursday Night Football was exclusively on Amazon Prime Video, unless you're in the markets of the teams that were playing. I think then you could still watch the games, but otherwise it was exclusively on Amazon Prime. You needed Prime to be able to watch it. But Thursday Night Football on Prime missed viewership goals. As Insider Intelligence Briefings analyst Daniel Konstantinovich writes, after hitting a six-year high in 2021, NFL ratings for the soon-to-conclude 2022-2023 season are expected to be down 3% year-on-year. Why? Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime Video. Thursday Night Football averaged under 10 million viewers, according to Nielsen. Amazon thinks it's closer to 11 million. Either way, 10 million, 11 million, Daniel knows it's down from 16 million a year prior when Thursday games were available on Prime Video and Fox and the NFL Network. That would be a roughly 30 to 40% drop in Thursday Night Football viewership, depending on whether you think Nielsen's numbers are right or Amazon's numbers are correct. Paul, I'll start with you. What's your take on Thursday Night Football's performance on Amazon Prime Video?
Well, it's a pretty big drop, but I'm not surprised, and largely because of the exclusive nature of the deal. You know, we all knew that when Twitter and then Amazon and others like YouTube started streaming live sports, it was generally in conjunction with existing broadcasters and was considered additive, and nobody was relying on it to sort of carry all the viewership. We're in a different time now where, you know, Amazon does have this exclusive deal. So, you know, it's going to take a while. I think it's going to be a little bit of a slow roll to get people to fully subscribe because, you know, it's not just being subscribed to Prime. You have to have a separate subscription to watch these games. And the other issue related to this is that a lot of these sports rights, the leagues are starting to parcel them out among many, many different parties, and it becomes very unwieldy as a consumer to try to figure out, you know, where your team is playing, where you're going to watch it. If you're like me and you get attached to your kind of like local broadcaster, as I do with the Mets, and then, you know, the game is suddenly on Apple TV and you have a whole new cast of characters, that kind of detracts from the experience. Mm-hmm. Not that that's necessarily going to determine whether you watch a game or not, but it's all part of the evolution of sports broadcasting into the digital realm and a lot of the unknowns that come with it.
Paul, I'm curious to know how many people signed up to Prime to watch Thursday Night Football versus people who had it and were able to watch it. So it'd be good to see some numbers on that. I mean, a dip, yeah, it was to be expected once Thursday Night Football, as you mentioned, went exclusively to Amazon Prime Video. Amazon had promised advertisers 13 million folks, so they were down on that promise. Max, a point made in some of the literature for this episode was that Thursday Night Football's matchups generally weren't very interesting this season. Six of the games pitting two teams that both ended up missing the playoffs against each other. So in six different games that happened, like Panthers versus Falcons, that was the lowest rated Amazon Prime Video game. So maybe it really was to be expected. What do you make of this 30 to 40% drop in Thursday Night Football viewership on Prime?
So I think that there's the point that Paul's made about the leagues kind of breaking up and parceling out their programming is really important, because I feel like this story highlights the broader risk of sports leagues going direct to their consumers. Amazon, you know, plausibly looked like a really strong partner for this endeavor. Obviously, they, you know, could write the check big enough to satisfy the NFL, but they also are, you know, pretty widely available by our own numbers. Over half of U.S. internet users watched video on Prime Video. So Theoretically, there's a good, strong bed of possible viewers there. And, you know, to hear Amazon's executives tell it, this was good for them in terms of driving Prime signups. The head of the executive in charge of sports, Jay Marines, sent out a memo the day after the first week of the season saying that it had driven a record number of signups, though he, you know, very wisely did not disclose how many that was.
Right.
But broadly, this is a story about the reality that the leagues are now thinking about and trying to explore the prospect of taking their products directly to consumers. You know, you see this in the deal that MLS signed with Apple TV Plus. You see that in the ongoing conversation that the NFL is having with partners like Apple about Sunday Ticket. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to start seeing it in about a year and a half when the NBA has to find a new TV partner. They cut the price of their League Pass product in half this year, which to me suggests that they are trying to build a case that they can plausibly go direct to consumer. You know, if they walk into a deal with whether it's ESPN or Turner or, you know, a broadcaster like NBC, they can say, we've got 65 million people paying us every month already. I'm just making that number out of thin air. I don't think they have that many, but
that's what we always do here, by the way.
So final question on the story, because it was a dip, but we expected a dip, but not by this much. Amazon's near 10 million viewers, 10, 11 million, depending on who you ask, was the lowest since the NFL started selling the Thursday Night Football package to TV companies in 2014. Daniel Frankel of Next TV was noting. So not great. However, gents, the number of Americans who watch live sports digitally, continues to climb. 96 million this year, 120 million in 3 years' time. That's one third of all Americans. Do we expect viewership, let's say Thursday Night Football viewership on Prime, to be at this new watermark? Or is it because the first year was exclusive and we expect it to tick up to the rates, the numbers, the audience that the NFL is used to?
My sense is that, you know, Amazon missed. There's no sugarcoating that. There's no getting around the fact that they underdelivered. But there is the important point that you made, Marcus, about the nature of the games. You know, if we have suddenly a season where the matchups are more interesting, then you're going to see those numbers go up. And I do think that it's going to take some time for habits to change, to catch up to the times.
Or for people to realize that Thursday Night Football was on Prime in the first place.
Yeah. And you know, to Max's point, Amazon has the pockets to do this and to stick it out. You know, I think other streaming services, other broadcasters may not be able to, you know, endure for as long as it might take to make this transition. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of all of the above. You know, there was definitely a miss, but I think it needs to be put into perspective, and it's not as bad as it looks when you say, you know, like 30 to 40%.
Yeah. One of the positives here was that Amazon's Thursday Night Football did capture a younger audience. The median age for the Prime Video Thursday Night Football viewer was 47 this season, which was 7 years younger, than the median age averaged by the rest of the NFL's TV rights packages. So I thought that was an interesting and important point.
That's old, man.
I would be willing to bet, though, that if they'd hit their number, the number that they'd promised, that age, median age, would have gotten a lot closer to where it's been. This is, you know, as pure an example of an anecdotal piece of evidence as you can get, but it took my mother until the fifth week of the season to figure out how to watch Amazon, to watch Thursday Night Football, and she's a Prime user. So, you know, I'm sure that there are millions of other folks of a generation like my mother's who are about as tech savvy as my mother, who, you know, just had a little bit of trouble figuring out how to make it work. And that might have informed the age variation there too.
Yeah, that's a good point. It'd be interesting to see those numbers next year and how they compare to this. Let's talk about something else with regards to advertising in sports, because, yeah, speaking about how advertisers are navigating this changing sports landscape and how consumers feel about it, Andrew Gallant of Civic Science recently wrote about this, discussing three themes: sponsor, logo, placement on team uniforms, which you may have noticed over the last couple of years in different sports leagues, digitally superimposed ads, and the legalization of sports betting. So let's take them in turn. Sponsor, logo placement on team uniforms. The NBA, MLB, and NHL, basketball, baseball, and hockey, have all begun adding sponsored patches to their team uniforms. This year is the NHL's first season with on-jersey advertising. And according to a December 2022 Civic Science survey, most American adults, 54%, disapproved of having these sponsored logos on NHL jerseys. A quarter approved, a quarter were neutral. Gents, thoughts on sponsor logo placement on team uniforms?
I think it's not an accident that the approval or disapproval numbers were lowest among NBA fans, because they have now sort of had it in their lives for many seasons now. And it's just something that, even though there's every sports culture has its traditionalists, and, you know, most of them are traditionalists to varying degrees, the reality is that it's really not that disruptive. I think what it ultimately boils down to is, you know, is any of this upsetting or, you know, disrupting the way that I have gotten used to watching the sport? And a logo on a jersey or a sweater in the NHL's case isn't going to fundamentally do that. So,
right. It's noticeable, but not disruptive. I remember seeing Wish, I think, sponsored the Lakers the first year that they had, or one of the first years that they had advertising the jerseys. And I noticed it, but it wasn't too disruptive. And as Max points out, the NBA has had logos on uniforms for the last 5 years. And because of that, they have the highest approval, 32%, and the lowest disapproval among the big three leagues, to Max's point, because they've had more time to get used to it than other leagues. Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with Max's point. I think it just takes some getting used to. And once you assimilate that into your thinking, it's really not that unnatural. I mean, you know, Formula One has always had, as long as I can remember, has always been like, you know, the cars and the uniforms have always been like a patchwork of logos. And I'm old enough to remember when professional soccer did not have any sponsors, you know, logos on shirts. And now literally every single team, every club team in the world has them, and it's just the way of the world. And, you know, people don't make their decisions as to what to watch or who to support based on those logos.
Let's talk about going digital. The NHL has started digitizing its ads on the dashboards around the rink during broadcast, Mr. Gallant explains. Fans in the arena still see the usual static banners, but those watching the broadcast see a digital and animated cycle of ads catering to the market they're watching from. According to that December 2022 Civic Science survey, sentiment about these digital types of ads in the NHL was evenly split, 35% approved, 37% disapproved. Thoughts, gents, on digitally superimposed ads around sports arenas?
Well, I think it's different in hockey than in other sports. And the reason is that you can see the reflection of the real ad on the ice which you cannot see on turf or on floorboard. And this is something I hadn't really thought about. I don't watch a lot of hockey because I still can't see the puck.
I'm so glad I'm not the only person who feels that way.
I love hockey, but I just can't see where the puck is, and that's a problem. But
Paul's staring at the opposite end of the ring.
In reading this article, I noticed that there are a couple of screenshots from comments where, you know, you can see this sort of ghost image of the actual logo versus, you know, that like the actual logo that's in the physical venue reflected on the ice. But the one that you're getting when you're watching it on TV is different. So there's a little bit of a disassociation there.
Yeah. Max, any thoughts?
I think what Paul observed is correct. And I also have been surprised by how less distracting this kind of technology has proven historically. The NBA, again, is, I guess, one or two seasons into doing this. And when I first started noticing it, I thought, oh my God, this is going to completely screw up my ability to watch basketball games, but it really hasn't done that at all. The only real downside, as far as I can tell, is that the Milwaukee Bucks were forced to retire their Cream City jerseys because they apparently, that color tone screws with the ads that are run in arenas. So if there are maybe some hockey sweaters of a certain shade that upset those superimpositions, then that might cause a problem. But
final thing here, gents, the legalization of sports betting. Mr. Gallen writes that as more states legalize sports betting, advertising and partners with the major professional sports have risen. Last year, the NHL inked a multi-year deal with PointsBet to integrate its content into games. The NFL signed nearly $1 billion in sports betting partnerships last season. According to Civic Science, over half of Americans disapprove of the integration of sports betting into broadcasts of sporting events. Only 19% held a favorable view. Quick thoughts here on the integration of sports betting into broadcasts of sporting events.
I mean, talk about something that intrudes upon and disrupts the traditional viewing experience. I am not a sports gambler, much to my wife's relief, but I have been surprised by how often, you know, the broadcasts cut away for little mini segments on, you know, what they think the next play is going to result in. And what's interesting to me is that a lot of sports broadcasters have sort of floated up these trial balloons of, you know, sort of betting specific either streams of games or, you know, kind of micro channels where people can watch a more kind of betting centric version of the games. And as far as I can tell, those have really not gained any traction at all. There is just not a kind of critical mass of truly hardcore gamblers that want that version of the game in front of them. And so I think that that's a major sign that even though there was some pent-up demand for sports betting, it's not so major that it's going to maybe transform the way that people want to watch the games.
Mm-hmm. Final thing for me is, personally, if we could get rid of ads in between free throws, I'd appreciate that. It's so awful. So someone will shoot a free throw, that go to the line for two, they'll shoot the first one, and then the announcer will be like, oh, quick word from fast food chain or from insurance company, and then 5 quick seconds this person yells at you the ad real quick, and then you don't, and then it's gone all of a sudden. And then you're back to the game. It's so disruptive. And to be perfectly honest, it comes across as desperate. A kind of, look over here, please look at me for 5 seconds because I pay for this slot. And it's so disruptive that I think I at least personally have such a negative reaction to the interruption that I don't think it's doing advertisers any favors.
Agreed.
You can see it also in who usually claims those spots, especially during, you know, broadcasts that I catch on League Pass. You know, if you check out a Kings game or a Thunder game, it's, you know, it's like a personal injury lawyer usually grabs that slot, or you know, like a snow plowing service. It's not exactly a blue chip advertiser that's yeah, claiming that inventory.
Yeah.
Better call Saul in between those free throws.
Why are you watching Kings games and OKC games, Max?
I have a debilitating, unmanageable NBA addiction, yes. Yeah. This is why my wife is relieved.
Much to your wife's
better
disappointment.
Yeah, we should start a Facebook.
Look, I'm not perfect. She knew that going in.
We didn't, though, so thanks for filling us in, Max, because we would have never known.
There's no box for it on the performance review, so.
That's all we got time for the lead. Time for the halftime report. Paul, I'll start with you. One takeaway from the first half.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway is back to Amazon and streaming. And look, the way of the future for sports and for everything is going to be streaming. So I think it's just a matter of time before we all adjust to that reality. And it may be a long time. And, you know, Max, your mom might take a while to come on board. And I know Ross, who's been on the show a lot, talks about his parents and grandparents a lot and how they do not stream Netflix because they're just not that tech savvy. But they will get there and so will everyone else.
Max, how about you?
Yeah, one of the points that I think is important to remember about these kinds of misses and growing pains is that one of the things that's kind of important to remember for all the sports leagues is that Amazon missing this badly on, you know, its promised audiences is really not that big of a problem because Amazon has a big, diverse, scaled digital media ecosystem that it can use to deliver make goods. If a sports league were to start, you know, handling its own media operations fully and on its own, and it fell this short on, you know, audience guarantees, its ability to deliver on those make goods would be much more limited and much more difficult.
I want to make a quick point on NFL sponsorship revenue. A recent Advanced TV article noting NFL sponsorship revenue for the 2022-2023 regular season reached an all-time high across both digital and physical assets. Sponsor United estimates the total sponsorship revenue across all 32 individual teams just over $2 billion, and it's 2.7 when combined with sponsorships for the league as a whole. So with 32 teams plus the league, that means this season's sponsorship revenue surpasses the previous season, which was 1.8 across all of the teams. That's what we've got time for the first half. Time now for the second. Today in other news, US TV advertising is expected to fall and Nielsen One ads just launched. Story one, US TV advertising is expected to fall 8% this year amid economic concerns, according to S&P Global, writes Wayne Friedman of MediaPost. S&P expect cable to fall 3.5%, network TV to fall 5%, and local to drop 18% this year in terms of advertising. That gives a total projected fall of 8% for US TV advertising on the year. Max, the most interesting sentence in this article is what and why?
It's the clause about cable TV dropping 3.5%. You can throw the broadcast and local numbers out the window. This is the year of our Lord 2023. There is no Olympics. There is no election. There is no World Cup. So the year-over-year comps are going to look terrible. But cable, which is somewhat more insulated against that, is still slumping because people are still cutting their cords, but it's not the immensely ominous number that you might expect of a more vulnerable advertising area.
So, Paul, S&P Global said US TV advertising expected to fall 8% this year amid economic concerns. What do our forecast teams say about the state of TV ad spending this year in America?
7.7%.
And we
made that forecast in October. It's not unusual for forecasters to align on their outlook, especially for something as big as TV ad spending and for which there's so much supporting data. But look, you know, this is where we're at this year. I mean, we lowered that forecast quite a bit because in March of last year, we had it not dropping anywhere nearly as far.
What's fascinating, though, is expecting an 8% drop this year, regardless if you ask S&P Global or our forecasting team. But it's going to go up and down over the next couple of years because, to Max's point, Olympics, elections, World Cups, things like that. The US TV ad spend expected to hold that $62 billion a year watermark for the next few years. It's going to go down, it's going to go up, it's going to go down, it's going to go up, but it's still going to hold that $62 billion watermark this year and in a few years' time. Story two, Nielsen One ads just launched on January 11th, starting a new era for the measurement giant, writes Insider Intelligence Briefing's analyst Daniel Konstantinovich. This is the first part of its much anticipated revamped measurement platform. Nielsen says the product will mark the first time advertisers, brands, and publishers will be able to understand reach and frequency deduplicated across linear TV, CTV, desktop, and mobile. But Paul, the most interesting sentence in this article is what and why?
So the most interesting part to me is that the field of measurement providers is narrowing. Around this time last year, we were seeing TV networks partnering with many, many different providers, and it really seemed like a Wild West. And now I think you're seeing companies like iSpot TV and VideoAmp and Comscore and Nielsen emerge as the standard bearers, or maybe that's the wrong word because we don't really have a standard right now, but there's certainly the leaders in this race to establish a new currency or a new set of currencies to measure TV advertising.
And that is all we have time for. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Max.
Always a pleasure, Marcus.
Thank you to Paul.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. And thanks to everyone for listening into the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Tinuity. Tune in tomorrow to the Reimagining Retail show hosted by Sarah Lebo, where she speaks with analysts Sky Canavis and Karina Perkins all about returns.
I will not accept any further Nick slander of the
I thought Max would like that one.
Didn't want to step on you, but yeah. They are in seventh. They are going to make the play-in and get steamrolled by Milwaukee. It's going to be great.
Wow!
Oh, too good.